The doctor was the monk. Sorry, old habits. Here we go. How does a podcast evolve after you've practically solved every puzzy and riddy? You really gotta expand upon your limited brand before your show gets really shitty. You turn to face reality and pray your personalities will carry this last minute pivot through. So here comes the content that nobody wanted. Now it's time for Hate Riddle Riddles Clue Crew.
Once upon a time, there was an Erin Keefe, a quirky young woman who sat by the river, writing and reading, throwing stones into the lake, hoping one day a stone would be thrown at her. And then one day, in the water, breached an old JPC, a grizzled old fuck of a guy who had a cane and a beard made of moss and candy. And he came over to Erin Keefe and sat down and told her of his life and his woes and his troubles and his successes and triumphs and adventures. And by the time his stories were done, that young woman, Erin Keefe, was nothing but a skeleton. And the moral of the story is, never talk to JPC.
Talk through him.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you find yourself confronted with a JPC in the wild, it's best not to make eye contact. What you want to do is you want to put your arms and legs out and make yourself as big as possible. It's going to scare him off because while he's a big presence, he's only 5'10 and a half, I want to say, 5'11 on a good day. You want to make a lot of noise, shake your hands wild, shake your legs wild, and yee-haw, ha, hee-haw, make a lot of sounds. That's going to spook off the JPC. That's going to confuse him.
Another way to spook off the JPC is to swirl an iced coffee and tell him that you're registered as an independent and you vote moderate and you vote for both parties.
I vote moderate.
I vote for moderate candidates in both parties and I love it and I continue to do so forever. Let's stay right in the hellish middle.
Hashtag Amy Klobuchar. Also, you can always fall back on JPC spray. You just spray it right in his mouth and he loves it and he goes, ooh, thank you, and then runs off into the mountains.
And JPC spray is sunscreen. I just don't think he's wearing enough, and I'm worried about him.
You got to hit JPC with some SPF.
Mariah does not let me leave the house without my JPC spray. She says arms, shoulder, neck, and face, JPC. Come on.
And you say, thank you, fiance mom.
So let me, JPC and Erin, let me ask the two of you, what is your, we've talked about our relationship with riddles in the past.
Mm-hmm.
What is your relationship?
Has that come up yet?
I think first episode.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Not a fan of the show.
Never heard an episode.
What is your relationship with like fairy tales, fables? Because I'm obsessed. I love fairy tales. I love fables. I love anything that's like folklore or stories from other countries. I grew up, I think I've told you all multiple times, I grew up with Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which is like collected folklore from around America. What do you think? What do you
That's
want?
That's a good question. I multiple times in my life have had sort of, and I'm always on the lookout for one of these. So if anyone ever finds one, I definitely don't want to buy a new one, but, one of those like anthology bound together and the pages are gold on the outside of, like folk tales and fairy tales.
Yep.
The books like that have a better energy than every other book.
Okay.
I said it.
I have one like that for Brothers Grimm.
Oh yeah, Brothers Grimm. Did you ever watch the musical version of that?
Of the Brothers Grimm?
Yeah, the musical movie.
I didn't know
Brothers
there was
Grimm.
One. Oh, with Matt Damon and Heath Ledger.
No, that's the horror movie. there's one that is from the 70s or 80s. It has the guy from the original Company, but anyways, and has maybe Shelley Duvall's in it. I don't know. A bunch of random actors are in it, but it is a real fever dream. Maybe we can do it for Review Crew. But that in particular, as a child, I was obsessed with that. It had like the, you turn around and the guy turns into a swan. If you like look back, that one, it had like the, all the classics.
All the hits. That's
Hansel
fantastic.
And Gretel, the whole thing. So that definitely stayed on my brain and imprinted it. JPC, what about you?
So, I mean, I definitely went through a phase as a adolescent where I was really, really, really into like Greek mythology. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the stories of the Greek and the Roman gods and, you know, Persephone and, you know, the turning the, you know, the what's the guy who stares
Orpheus
at himself?
And
himself in the
Narcissa,
Narcissa, whatever. And I loved that. I was really, really, really into that. I saw that a lot of that, and which is why I enjoyed the video game Hades so much.
Mm-hmm.
But Adel, using folklore sparked something in me. Did you ever play the PlayStation 3 video game called Folklore?
I played the Xbox game Fable, but okay. I never played Folklore. What is Folklore?
Folklore was a game, and I'll read off of the Wikipedia page because I only vaguely remembered it, and then I was like, oh yeah, this game. So the game is set in Ireland in the Celtic otherworld of Irish mythology, centering on a young woman named Ellen, a journalist named Keats, both playable characters, who together unravel the mystery that the quaint village of Doolin hides, the mystery that can only be solved by seeking the memories of the dead and the dangerous folk-ridden netherworld.
This sounds fucking incredible. Is it a good game?
It was pretty good, yeah. You play as both Ellen and Casey's it has a good theme song. Oh yeah, the music was good. It was like dark and spooky, and you're in like an old Celtic like village by the bay, and there's like you're solving a mystery. I think there was like a death or something, or multiple deaths.
You're but just you describing Resident Evil.
It had like a Silent Hill vibe, but not as horror-y, more like mystery. Yeah. But both characters, you had to play as them both. And you had to beat every level as both of them, and they would experience the levels slightly different ways depending on which character you played. And I found that out after I had like almost beat the game with one of them, and then you get to a point where you're like, you have to switch to the other one, and I was like, oh, I don't want to do this, and then I never played it again. But I did really like the game. I think the game was fun, and it has some decent reviews too, so
I'll have to check that out. Folklore.
Well, it's a PlayStation 3 game from 2007, so I don't know how you check that out, but you go check it out. Take a look.
I'll buy a PS Vista?
Yeah.
Vista? What is that?
When you Googled it, is there any like updated version of it, or is it just from that time?
One thing that I Googled when I Googled Folklore Game, the first thing that came up was Folklore Game Remake, which just led to a Reddit post of someone saying, does anyone remember this game?
Oh, well.
So I don't know. I don't know if there is a remake.
Mm-hmm. I will say I really enjoy like the brother. I have a book of Brother Grimm fairy tales that are like the original ones, because a lot of them have been. They've been calmed down, they've been soothed and Disney-fied.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of the original stories are very fucked up, and I really enjoy that.
Yeah, because they're all like all of life was fucked up from the time when those original stories came out, and it was all just like mm-hmm. people getting their hands chopped off with axes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. The reason I bring this all up is because by the time this releases, we will have just come back from Denmark. And in the city that we are staying in, Odense, or Odense, whichever way you prefer, because I don't know how it's said, that is the birthplace of one Hans Christian Andersen. Now, the last time I was in Odense, I took a tour of his childhood home. I went to the Hans Christian Andersen Museum. It's all very, very exciting, very cool. And they talk about how prolific he was. So just a few quick facts. Hans Christian Andersen was born in Odense, Denmark, on April 2nd, 1805. He had a half-sister named Karen, which is very funny. His father was also named Hans and considers himself related to nobility.
Everybody's dad considers himself related to nobility. We used to be people of this town.
My son Hans is a football legend. The family suggested that Andersen was an illegitimate son of King Christian VIII. So
wow.
So what I want to do, because Hans Christian Andersen was so prolific, what I show here, and I don't know if this is true, you probably know him from The Emperor's New Clothes. The Little Mermaid is probably his biggest hit. He also wrote The Princess and the Pea, The Snow Queen, which I believe is the basis for Frozen. Mm-hmm. So a lot of The Ugly Duckling, a lot of big, big ones. Thumbelina.
If I were a princess, I'd be the princess from Princess and the Pea.
Because you have trouble sleeping?
Yes.
I'd be the pee.
Oh, no. Oh, so what no. I show here is I show 168 stories that Hans Christian Andersen wrote.
Holy shit. He's done more stories than we've done podcast episodes.
Back then, this is what counted as podcasts. So a lot of these, I'd say 99% of these, I've never heard of in my life. So we have 168. So what I want to do is We're going to take turns. Somebody's going to say a number. I'm going to read the title of the story, and I want us to just kind of improvise this fairy tale. If it's one that we happen to know, maybe we'll do what I talked about with the Grimm Brothers Grimm, and we'll make it a little darker than it typically is, or put some fun twists into it.
Cool.
But that's going to be our episode. And you can start when it's your turn, when you say a number and we hear the title. You can sort of narrate or storytale as I did up top with a Once Upon a Time, if you will. And then from there, you can kind of set up scenes, and these can be as long or as short as we want, because we're in charge.
I will say
we're in charge.
That's right, Eric.
I'll go on record as saying this. No matter how famous the story is, no matter how well-known the story is, I will not know 60% of the details.
Maybe, maybe not.
James, I can confidently say that there is not a story on Earth that I know more than 60% of the details for.
Interesting. JPC, I think you just volunteered to go first, so pick a number between 1 and 168.
It should come as a surprise to no one that the 69. Number that I picked.
Don't do it. Don't do
69.
It.
69.
Perfect. So 69, this is a story called There Is No Doubt About It. There is no doubt about it. So JPC, whenever you're ready,
okay,
we're going to sit at your feet. You're going to open up a dusty old book with gold-leafed edges,
yeah,
and you're going to read to us the story, There Is No Doubt About It. Although this could be, that's funny that is next to 69, because that seems like some kid went into the Wikipedia and was like, no doubt about it, 69. Yeah. Yeah, I guess next to 420 it says raise the fucking roof, get blazed. So yeah, I'm sorry. Here we go. There's no doubt about it.
Sister Mary Catherine had finished all of her chores. She sat on her bed made of straw and thatch and in threadbare weaving. She looked to her left. The chickens had all been fed. They were clucking away in the yard. She looked to her right. The rectory had been swept. It was so fit you could eat soup from the very floor. But Sister Mary Catherine was still very, very horny.
Well, I've done my chores and I've fed the chickens, but I'm just still horny. Oh, whatever can I do?
Cluck, 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 cluck. Fuck, fuck, fuck.
I'm starting to hear the chickens thinking that they want to have sex with me. Cluck, I must fuck, go cluck, to Mother the Cats.
Any name, cluck, cluck, cluck.
I must go to Sister Abba the Cats, and she'll give me some advice.
So Sister Mary Catherine went to the head mother, Sister Abba the Cats? Is that what we're saying?
I don't need any lip from the narrator, thank you very much.
No, Abba the Cats is what her name was. The mother superior of all of the entire nunnery, Sister Abba the Cats, was a sour old dowager. She had a snide remark, and she was none too pleased when chores weren't finished. But she had a begrudging respect for the way that Sister Mary Catherine worked so hard.
Oh, such a knocking at my door. Do enter.
Knock, 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 knock. Excuse me, I'm sorry to bother you.
It doesn't seem you're too
superior.
Sorry. My name may be Abba the Cats, but I'm no pussy. Sit down.
I'll sit right on the floor. Okay, a crisscross apple. I have something I must confess to you, and then also I need a little bit of advice.
Go on, child, you silly, frazzled little fur.
Finished with my chores, but I'm still ever so horny, and I know you told me doing the chores would get the horniness to go away, but I'm still horny, and I, quite frankly, am about to masturbate and have the chickens watch.
Sister Mary Catherine, you do lie before me.
Well, I sit before you.
You sit, yes, I'm sorry. But you do lie as well with your tongue. You said you are finished with your chores, but you are still horny. My dear, being horny is one of our chores. We bear the burden of horniness so that others may live frivolously and fucking frolic and have a bacchanal in their butt.
Okay, yeah, well, then I'm going to go and I'm definitely not going to do anything.
Hold on. If you must quench this thirst,
ew,
there is a well.
Ew.
There is a well in your room that's hidden under your bed. If on the third night you, well, actually any night, if on any night you climb down there, you will meet a mysterious figure who will satiate your needs. But I must speak of it no more.
All right, thank you so much.
Oh, bring money. Sorry, one more thing. Bring money.
Oh, thank goodness you said something. That would have been awkward.
For food. You don't have to pay for, you know, what I said, but for food.
Understood. Thank you so much.
Do the other people make fun of me? Do the other sisters talk shit about me?
No doubt about it.
Okay, thank you.
So Sister Mary Catherine left the old curmudgeon of a nun in her tower and went back to her room. She was pacing about because she was still so very horny, but she was also so very ashamed that God had made her this way. So ashamed that she began to push the thatch and hay and rough fabrics aside from her bed. And lo, to her surprise, was a deep, deep well. She cupped her hands to the side of her mouth and gave a hello, and it echoed through the vastness of the well. She couldn't tell where its bottom was, but she could tell her bottom wasn't getting any less horny. So she decided to hook up some rigging and climb deep, deep into the well.
I'm climbing down the well and climbing. It's getting awfully dark. Hello.
Just when she thought she couldn't climb anymore, she heard a rustling to her left and saw a soft break upon the stones. As she ran her finger over the stones, there was a loud crack and a shift moving as the stones quickly pushed back, revealing a window where a man wearing a Burger King employee's uniform and a headset stood out the window to take Sister Mary Catherine's order.
Hey, welcome, Burger King. My name is Russell. Can I take your order?
Whoa. What? This is incredible. Yeah. What's good here?
Well, we do
nothing,
have
nothing, right?
We don't have anything incredible, but we do have an impossible burger. We also have chicken fries, I believe. Maybe that's... No, I'm sorry. That's White Castle. We have Whoppers.
I'll take your French fries and a Whopper. No, one of those little crowns. But well, only for fun.
They're not my French fries, but one order of French fries, one
but
Whopper.
But he was wrong. For chicken fries were a Burger King menu item. They were Burger King first before White Castle.
Well, Wait, I just checked the menu. We have chicken fries. Did you want chicken fries?
I shan't have any chicken because I'm going to bring this food to the chickens and they'll eat it while I masturbate in front of them.
Huh. Wow. I've never heard somebody say shan't before. What was the other
shan't.
Part?
Shan't. Nothing. The other part was nothing. And that's a great question. Keep
but
asking
Sister
great
Mary
questions.
But Sister Mary Catherine searched through her satchel pouch and realized she hadn't heeded the old nun's advice. She had no money to pay the Burger King man.
Here you go. Here's your chicken
heat
fries.
I didn't heat up the old nun's advice. Oh, brother. sister. I didn't heat it.
Hey, you're not going to jerk off with these chicken fries, are you? Hello?
Sister Mary Catherine smiled a devious smile, and the Burger King man shut the window as quickly as he could. She had only one choice. She must continue deeper, deeper into the well to find a cure for the horniness that stirred inside her loins.
I'm going deeper, deeper into the well. Wait, going so deep is curing me of my horniness. This is sort of like sex, going this deep into the well.
Who goes there? It's me, the well owl.
You know what? I don't think I need you, pal.
And she didn't.
Well, actually.
No, she didn't. And she didn't. Because
I'm climbing back up.
Come on.
She apparently found her own cure. It was just going into the well that did it for her.
Well, I was
going
to say the well represents
well, I know.
Vagina.
Hold on.
No doubt about it.
The narrator knows what was going to happen later in the well. I mean, for sure, that's how most people get it fixed. But, you know, she did it. She did it to herself.
Okay,
so
fine.
And then snap, 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 women getting things done. Sister Mary Catherine climbed out of the well and she was back in her room.
Well, I'm not horny anymore, and now I'm just hungry. Wait, I ended up taking some of this food by accident. He handed it to me, and I didn't have to pay for it. Okay.
She stole
it,
folks.
Only two sins folks, for today,
on.
Then.
Hold on, she stole it. She stole the food. What she just described was how she saw it, but she definitely stole that food.
The end.
What was that one called?
that was our incredible story called There Is No Doubt About It.
Okay, yeah.
Why do you think I kept saying there's no doubt about it?
So the moral of that story is she stole that food.
and I forgot to mention this list is chronological order. So that is literally the 69th story he ever wrote.
Wow.
About a horny nun. Hans Christian Andersen. Hans Christian Andersen, you little fox.
What's it actually about? Do you know?
Don't know. Could look up. Don't want to. Aaron, you're up.
I'm ready.
Let's choose a number between 1 and 168 that's not 69.
420 is already taken.
100.
Whoa, 100. 100. Great choice. Unfortunately, this is maybe the least descriptive title besides 69. You two
are... 99.
No. Okay. You could just make it up.
We'll stick with 100. This story is called Anne Lisbeth. Anne Lisbeth.
I can't pick another one?
Yeah, you can pick another. She can pick another one.
Okay. 99 is called The Girl Who Trod on the Loaf.
That's good.
Well, yeah. You were going to rob me of that?
For Anne Lisbeth? No thanks.
In a very small village that's far, far away, tucked between two mountains is a little town. And inside that little town, there is a little street. And on that little street, there is a little bakery. And inside that little bakery is a little girl.
Tra-la-la-la-la.
And that little girl is the daughter of the head baker at the bakery. She's the only child and the only living relative of this baker. And it is her burden to bear that she must take over the bakery when she's over, when she's older. But inside her heart, her very little heart, she has a little dream, and that dream is to become a dancer. A dancer? How could she be a dancer when she has to run a bakery?
I love the narrator questioning themselves.
What the heck, me? Yeah, I just told you. She has to run the bakery. It's sort of her family obligation. The bakery will die. How will the father support himself in his old age? The bakery's been his family for 300 years. But she wants to be a dancer.
This is when Hans Christian Andersen was famously doubting himself and his talents.
Yeah.
When her father went out to sell the loaves at the market, she would sometimes allow herself a moment or two to do a little tippity-tap on the floor or one spin to the oven. But she shan't, bringing that word back, do it in front of her father because she doesn't want to break his little heart.
Okay, looks like Papa is gone. All right, baguette, over here. Rye loaf, you're on too. Here we go. Tippity-tap and dip in a bread. I kiss the bread and bite off a chunk. I'm Anne Lisbeth,
dancing girl. Her father, return home.
Ah, my packets, my pockets are fat with gold from the market, for I've so... Dearest daughter.
Oh, no.
Explain to me, your father, what is taking place in my home.
Father... It's the neighbor. She cast a spell to make me dance with bread. She's a witch.
I knew it. I'll summon the town council and she shall be burned and drowned.
The little girl immediately regretted what she said. The old woman next door had been nothing but kind to her in all of her years. The old woman, too, is one of the first people to get her interested in music. When the old woman was young... and the little girl was even younger, she would play her violin on the porch sometimes, once, then twice a week. And the little girl got inspired to dance by the music. But now she threw that woman right under the bus. And we're going to go to the town council meeting on the big street in the big town hall.
Harumph, 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 rhubarb, rhubarb, rhubarb. Who?
Gentlemen of the town council. You all know me, Rodolfo the Baker. Rodolfo's Bakery, open for 300 years, and thanks to my daughter, many more.
You've got the most excellent sourdough. I hope to eat it until my old age.
I bring you bad tidings, council members, for upon my daughter's witness, who I trust with all my head, heart, mind, and body, The old neighbor woman has turned out to be a witch who has been bewitching with spells of dancing my daughter's brains, and she must be dashed upon the earth and burnt upon the stake and drowned just in a river or any water.
Well?
Yes, all right. Okay.
We agree, but first, let's hear from the little girl, your daughter.
Yes, she shall give testimony here today.
The little girl continued to lie. She lied to the council about what the old woman had done, which was nothing.
The old woman, at night, she shrinks herself and then crawls through our keyhole, and then she turns into... Yeah, and then she turns into an ostrich.
Damn!
And kicks all the bread, and then she...
What?
Passes, yeah, and she puts dust on the bread that turns them into magical dancing breads.
Oh, no!
And then the dancing breads, when I eat them, they made me dance, and I cannot be cured.
Fuck!
The town council was filled with a bunch of rubes, for if they had ever met a child or paid attention before, they could tell that that was the exact cadence of a child lying through their teeth. The old woman gets marched to the center of town. A stake is put up in the middle of town with hay all around it. She is tied to the stake.
Now, we'll give turnabouts fair play. You've been accused by my daughter, the apple of my eye, the orange of my strawberry fields, as being a witch, and you must now stand trial or suffer the consequences. What say you, witch?
The woman stared in front of the town. She had accepted her fate, that she would die because of a lie of one little girl. But instead of arguing against it, the woman just began to hum a beautiful, very jaunty tune.
What?
One by one, the people in the village started to tap their feet, tap their toes.
Tap, 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 tap,
and smile.
What's happening to me? I must dance. I'm the local blacksmith, but I can't stop dancing. It's magic, you see. Witch!
I'm the one who fucks the chickens every morning. I'm the one who fucks them, and I love to dance.
Oh, Corey got out. Corey got out. Grab Corey. Grab Corey.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
All right, we got Corey. God. Ladies and gentlemen of the town, I, the baker, as the most important man in town, am your mayor. I see now. I was wrong. While this is definitely a witch, because she did cast a spell on all of us, and we all just saw how we acted, maybe some witch spells are good, because this spell made me smile and made me want to tap my foot.
The little girl stood up nice and strong in front of the witch and used her body to block the witch and told the truth to her father about what the little dream in her little heart was.
Now that my father has said that there's good spells and we're not killing this witch, I found my courage to stand in front and brace for any blow that might come.
Never said we weren't killing the witch.
Oh, Papa, please, I must...
But we're not!
Oh, okay. I must admit something. When I'm whiling away the hours while you are traversing about the land, collecting oats and phone numbers, I have been dreaming of dancing. Now, this woman did play a part in that she used to play the violin and I would dance around and laugh and have joy with her, but all she did was awaken inside what was already inside me. So this woman is not to blame. I want to be a dancer. There is no magic at hand except for the magic of a little girl's dreams.
Just in that moment, the old woman did a spin and turned around and turned back into a beautiful young woman who is age appropriate to fall in love with the father. For she had had a curse put on her from a witch to get preemptively older than she actually was. And the only thing that could unlock it is a little girl being brave enough to say what her dream was.
Wow, that old woman turned 15. Age appropriate times.
Nope, let's just make it. Hold on. The narrator backpedaled.
That old woman just turned 38.
For that old woman had put a curse on her, for the old woman, who is now a young woman, had had that curse put on her because she wasn't honest about her own dream when she was a little girl.
Well, now that you're age appropriate for me, the baker, who's basically the mayor of town, would you be my wife? Would you help me raise my daughter?
For the sake of this being from this time, sure, yeah, okay, yes.
Do you gotta say, her mom's still very much in the picture. So, she's at two towns over right now, doing a bread deal.
We just start as friends. Okay.
No, I really need a commitment on top.
The three of them. The little girl.
I got friends.
The woman and the horrible father lived in harmony. The father even took up the violin and then the drum and would play music for the little girl as she danced and followed her dream.
We're living in harmony.
Harmony.
Harmony. I'm not good at this. Can I just play the drum?
Sure.
The end.
Yay. And that was the story of the girl who trod on the loaf.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah, I love that. I love that angle.
Love that.
And I gotta say, I love the father character. I think he was the big surprise.
I like that he wasn't
hits.
Looking for any female friends. That's what I like about him.
No. Looks like it is my turn.
All right, so, I'll pick a number.
So I'm going to, I gotta go with my favorite number, which is 33.
Yeah.
So I'm going to look at 33. Number 33 is called the fir tree, F-I-R. Now, okay. What is a fir tree? A fir tree is just like a...
it's like a Christmas tree, right? Like a fir?
Yeah, it's like a coniferous, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to go with the fir tree. Again, I can't stress enough, almost all the other names are way more fun and exciting.
You can pick another one.
No. Let's go with the fir tree.
Rules are rules.
Rules are rules. So here is number 33, the fir tree.
Once upon a time and back in olden day, in the Germany of old when Deutschland was the land... There was the Black Forest. In those days, there was no settlements inside or encroaching cities. It stood on its own merits, and it was proud, strong, upward and tipping and brushing up against the sky, tickling the heavens even. And in that tree there stood one very, very short tree. Amongst all the giants reaching and raising to the sky, bragging about their branches and how thick their trunks were, there was one tiny little tree. And at the base of this tree was almost the tiniest wisps of fur. Now, the other big, thick trees, the long, heavy, hefty, bulging trees, they had a lot of fur around their bases. They were grown and big and strong. But the tiny little fir tree couldn't grow or wouldn't grow. It wasn't sure. Either way, it knew that it was not heard. Its voice could not carry up to its brothers and sisters in the sky. And so it started to befriend creatures closer to the ground. It became best friends eventually with a squirrel.
Hey, are you sure I don't look a fool? Because I have very little fur. I feel like I'm basically naked. Nibbles.
You're not naked. You're actually perfect. I can put my nuts right around you and then keep them warm all winter. And no one else would think to come to this tiny little tree, so no one will find my nuts.
Well, I'm glad I'm of some use. I feel so little and so, I don't know. My dream is, you don't want to hear about my dream.
And he didn't, and he died. So the fir tree... So the fir tree...
What are you talking about?
The fir tree waited years and years, seasons and seasons, winters and summers. Winters and summers passed. 30-odd years later, the fir tree came upon a new friend, a bird that came from the heavens, came from the nests up in the fir tree's brothers and sisters, and landed upon the fir tree's one sole, thin, brittle branch and began to speak to her.
Excuse me, I have to be honest with you right out of the gate. I haven't had a friend for 30 years, and I've had my heart broken before.
I don't know why. You're the perfect size tree for a bird like me. It's so busy up above, and all of the other birds want to fight for the best spots when it touches the sun. but I like the dark, and I would happily live here on your little branch.
Oh, I'm so glad that I'm of use to you, but I really wish I could have my dream come true, but he probably don't want to hear about my dream.
He didn't, and he died.
No!
100 years passed. Part of the forest started to be chopped down. The strong, tall trees, of course, made good, sturdy lumber, and so they were cut down and used and carted all around Europe to be used across the land for homes and buildings and castles. Eventually, there was an outgrowing of maybe 10 trees tops, and in the center of those 10 trees hid, to every naked eye, the little fir. And suddenly, a snake slithered up from the construction going on to get away from the human encroachment. The snake slid up to the fir tree to find comfort.
I haven't had a friend in 100 years. I'll never be lumber, and I'm useless to everyone. Oh, who are you?
You're not useless to me. See, all of the humans want the big trees, but I can hide here under your thin little branch.
And I don't like snakes.
I'm sorry, what?
I don't like snakes. They're kind of like, ugh.
Yeah, she didn't, and he died. The 10 other trees were cut down. Cities grew taller and taller. Glass was invented.
What else?
And eventually, an enormous city was built. And in the middle of town square, unassuming, unsuspecting, stood the little fir. For no man or woman had the heart to cut down the smallest tree they'd ever seen, the cutest, most uncovered tree they had ever witnessed in all their travels and tribulations. And so one day, 500 years from the start of our story, a young boy who had just moved to the city with his family found the little fir tree and approached it, hoping to find a commonality with this sad soul.
I'm so small. Nobody even wants me around. Nobody likes me.
Hey, I know a thing or two about that.
Whoa.
You're the littlest brother, huh?
Yeah, I am.
That was me for forever. No one paid attention to me. No one gave me a gift on Christmas. I just was all alone. I could never impress anyone, so you can sit by me, kid.
Did you ever have a friend?
Yeah, I had two, but that was like 400 years ago.
Well, don't forget the snake, said a voice.
Not my friend. My friend.
My bad, said the voice.
Remember?
And backed off.
Oh my God, wait a second. Let me just move some of this dirt out of here. Well, this is the bones of a squirrel. And let me move some of this dirt. This is the bones of a bird.
They lived their lives in my arms.
And let's see this. The bones of a snake.
Ew, ew, get it off, get it off.
You're a goddamn fucking murderer.
No,
yes, you are.
The boy was unsure if snake had bones, which is absolutely wild. They continued to converse.
You're a goddamn murderer.
Where did you get that saw?
My dad's a lumberjack. And I took it out of his wood shop.
Before you go, did you ever have a dream?
I did have a dream. I dreamed that I would be the one to get revenge for the snakes and the birds and the squirrels of the world from the trees that murdered them with their poison magic.
And as he started to saw the fir tree, more fir grew around the base. It started to sprout taller and taller to where the young lumberjack's cuts started to get above his head, where he had to start new cuts. And yet still, the tree kept growing and growing. And as it grew, it told the little boy its dream.
Woo! I wanted to be big, motherfucker! Fuck you! Fuck all y'all! I'll tear down buildings, bitch! I'm big now! Fuck you!
The end.
Honestly, that's maybe my favorite ending to a story of all time.
I love how these stories.
I've read a prayer for Owen Meany, famously.
These all have such great morals to them as well.
Yeah, of course.
Like the moral of that story was, Fuck you, I'm tall.
Fuck you, I'm big, bitch.
I love more. That's the moral of basketball, isn't it? Is fuck you, I'm tall.
Yeah, yep. That's true. The moral of basketball. I know that whenever I played, and I didn't play for very long, but after a game, coach would bring us all back into the locker room, and he would bring out that whiteboard with all the positions that we played during the game, and he said, all right, kids, now, what was the moral of today's basketball game?
I love a coach just on a whiteboard writing down the positions. Well, we have center, we have power forward, we have forward, shooting guard, and guard. Do with that information what you will, boys. Let's get them.
No descriptions of those. It's certainly not like a map of it. No diagramming.
Here's what I now need is JPC, I need a number from you between 1 and 6. And it can be 1 or 6.
Then I'll just go with lucky number 6.
6? Aaron, I need a number from you between 1 and 0. 0 being right after 9. So
what?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, or 0.
Oh, I see.
I guess I should say 0 to 9 is an easier way to do that.
8.
And I'm sorry, JPC, you said
6.
6. So 6, 8. Okay. So now we have a story, and this is going to be, the two of you are going to be both narrating this.
Okay.
You can do as little or as much as you want based on what's happening. So number 68, this is the story called On Judgment Day. On Judgment Day. Whenever you two are ready. Let's have fun and let's say all three of us can narrate at any time.
Sure. Great. Yeah.
So all three of us narrate. All three of us can be a part of it. Whatever we want. On Judgment Day.
Once upon a time, there were three siblings, each more wicked than the last. The eldest.
Hello, my name is Chuck, and I'm pretty wicked.
Chuck sucked. He stole from the poor and gave to the rich. He ate peanut butter with his hands. He was literally the worst. The middle child.
Hey, everybody, it's me, Marty. I am addicted to porn. I have a cigarette fetish, for what that's worth. Not much, as the papers would say, and I'm pretty bad.
Marty was a true tool bag, and the littlest one.
Hey, what's up? I'm Courtney. I'm trying to get on reality TV. Anyone will do.
This was one of the worst families that had ever existed, and yet they never seem to get their due.
They each had their own hobbies. They each had their own love interests. Yet no matter what they did, they never found their footing. They never really truly enjoyed themselves. They were always annoyed and miserable. And their goal was to, unfortunately, make others around them as miserable as they were. And they succeeded at every turn.
But they never faced a consequence. None of the three were ever arrested. None of the three were ever scolded. None of the three were even ever broken up with. Skating by, making the world a much worse place, with ne'er a consequence in sight.
Until
one day.
Dong, 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 dong.
They inherited a grandfather clock. Dong.
When their old grandfather mysteriously passed away.
They had to spend one night in his haunted mansion. And if they did, they got $1 million and the clock. And they did that, and so now the clock's home with them is where we're at in the story. But one time at midnight.
But they blew through that million. I mean, it's gone.
Uh-huh. 1 weekend in Vegas.
Can you believe it? One weekend, $1 million.
And 1 week to the day after they got the clock and blew the $1 million, which they did hard. Buffets, blackjack.
Sorry, we should be clearer. 6 hours in Vegas and that million was gone.
And we said weekend, but it was a Tuesday afternoon.
And they didn't even think to check in with like the concierge or the pit boss. So they didn't get free rooms. They didn't get free dinners.
No.
They didn't get free shows, which they would have if you just check in with the pit boss and say, hey, I'm going to drop a lot of money. They'll take care of you.
But didn't do any of that.
They did nothing of that.
But
they'd never been to Vegas.
1 week to the day. And you could tell they never went to Vegas because they stayed at Excalibur, which is like old school versus like the new school.
Wait, where should you stay?
Well, I feel like, I mean, Luxor is outdated, right? So you want to avoid like that part of the strip. So maybe like, I mean, the Bellagio is always nice.
That's
but
where I want to stay.
The Wynn Casino is very nice.
The middle brother wanted to stay at Circus Circus, which is, that's the wrong choice.
No.
But the games are fun. The games are fun.
The games are fun. Don't stay there.
Don't stay on like Fremont Street. I mean, like the light show, the covering is very cool, but Fremont Street is just like Binion's Horseshoe. You get like a $1.50 steak, which is just nasty.
And, we'll talk.
Vegas either. You don't want to, you want to be on the strip in one of the hotels that has been redone or rebuilt within the last 5 years.
Yes.
Bellagio.
The Bellagio is fine.
I'll say the Bellagio.
Number one with the bullet. 1 week to the day after they blew the money in Vegas and they got the grandfather clock, the clock struck midnight. And as the clock struck midnight, two doors they had never noticed before opened slowly. And jutting forward on a piece of old brittle wood was a figurine of a Grim Reaper. The Grim Reaper stood off the plank of wood and started to grow in size until he was no longer a figure on the clock but a person in the room. And he pointed his finger at all three of them and said, Tonight, you die.
What?
Yeah. Oh, come on, man. What are you talking about?
Tonight, you three die. You will be judged on what you did and what you did not do in this life.
Okay, well, are we going to heaven or hell?
That's for you to decide.
All right.
Well,
all
no,
right.
No. Wait. That's for
I
me.
Get to decide?
That's for me to decide.
Oh, I want
to
go to hell. Oh, I mean, shit. Fuck.
Hold on, little sister. Let Marty handle this.
It's too late. She wants to go to hell. And the Grim Reaper snapped his fingers, and immediately she was staying
in room. Is that a reality show?
She was staying in room 148 in Circus Circus.
What's up? I'm in hell.
We went back to Chuck and Marty alone now in the room with the figure.
Oh, okay. Hold on, Chuck. Now I know how this game is played. All right, Reaper, I'll play your game. What do you want? I suck you off. I let you watch me do it to myself. I do a cigarette thing on my own body. What do you want? What do you like? You tell me what you like. I'll do it. I got no shame. I'll do it. I'll do it all.
I want your soul, the Grim Reaper said in a raspy, guttural grumble.
Soul, hole, pole, whatever you want. Whatever's good, I'll do it, man. Don't bother me.
The narrator couldn't handle this another second and sent him to hell.
Oh!
And now remained only the oldest, Marty, the peanut butter...
No, Chuck.
Chuck, the peanut butter fingerist, the Robin reverse Robin Hood himself. And Chuck had seen what had happened to his brother Marty and his sister Courtney, and he wanted no part of it. So he simply stood in front of the Grim Reaper and said nothing. Nothing at all.
Ah, so you're saying nothing at all. You're playing a very dangerous game, little Chuck.
He almost spoke, but bit his tongue.
But if you won't talk, then I can't make my Grim Reaper magic work. Well, if you don't go to heaven, you don't go to hell, and you never say a word, I guess you'll just have to live inside this old clock with me.
And that's the moral of the story.
Oh.
If you're a dude, shut up, and then you don't have to die. Just shut up for a little bit.
Is it so hard for you to just shut the fuck up?
Yeah, just shut up for a little.
Just shut up. When someone's talking in a meeting, you don't have to play devil's advocate and just give an opinion that's not even your fucking opinion. Shut up.
Or even more simple, if you see someone's haircut and you don't like it, don't say, did you get a haircut? Because when they say yes, they don't want to hear you go, huh. They want to hear, I like your haircut. So why even bring it up if you don't like it? What are you doing, huh?
If someone tells you about an emotion they are currently experiencing and you say, actually, to the emotion that someone else is experiencing in their body, just shut up. Instead.
Just shut up.
Someone else's physical change is not an invitation for your opinion. Shut up. Shut your mouth. Shut up.
Shut up.
Shut up.
And get off Twitter.
Yes. Too, get off all of it.
Unless you have something awesome to say.
Yes.
If it's funny, but here's the thing. It's got to get over 20 likes in 10 minutes or you got to delete it. Yes. You got to delete it.
The end.
Not yet. My tip is, if you want over 20 likes, add the phrase, I'm shaking. That'll always get you at least 150 likes. Always.
Recently, didn't you say something? What was your tweet that said, I'm shaking, and then it got a ton of likes?
I joked about tweeting, I out pizza the hut, I'm shaking, yeah. And it got about 1,000 likes. So
okay.
That's the moral of the story.
Who's the fool?
And men, be more like women. Every time women see each other, they scream and they go, you're stunning. I've never not heard a woman call another woman stunning when they meet each other after a long absence. Right?
And what
I tried to end the story, and the men kept talking.
Well, Aaron, actually, we're trying to get across the moral, and the moral is for men to shut up. Men, there's not always a need to talk. Sometimes, what was that?
No, go ahead.
I was in the middle of saying something.
I know, go ahead.
Men, and what do men sometimes do? It's best
men
to just
give
stop
each
talking.
Other the stunner, the stone cold stunner, which is where they crack open a beer, they put their like the guy's head on their shoulder, and then they like fall down to the ground a little, and then you just go, oh, you're all discombobulated,
you're dizzy,
oh,
yeah,
dizzy, and then Stone Cold's got you right where he was, you dumb motherfucker,
right,
shut up.
He wants you.
Sorry, I just went to go get Froyo. Are we done yet?
We didn't notice you were gone. Men, no one not to talk.
Pay attention.
Aaron, you want to take it away?
Neptune.
The end. Forever.
Waka waka, kids.
Dang it, that's the wrong theme again. I mean, they are really similar, dude. That was Clue Crew, so now here's a who's who. The relatable host was Aaron Keith. If you rolled your eyes, it's because of Adel Rafi or that other young guy, fucking JPC. Casey Tony edited what everybody said, and F. Mobley Cardamus did the logo. Arnie Parrott sang and wrote every single friggin' note of 1, 2, 3, 4, hate riddle riddles, Clue Crew.